I have previously always found it with people when they can't tolerate a gut protocol or any sort of detox. I'm like, what's going on? It turns out that there's mold in their home.
When mold gets disturbed, whether we clean it or we're doing a remodel, they break off into smaller fragments. That's why it's tricky to catch it, even if you're testing.
Are there more common places that people are going to see mold?
Anywhere that there's moisture, it just takes 24 to 48 hours for the right conditions to have mold become a problem. Carpets is big, furniture can grow mold. Medical devices like CPAP is notorious for growing mold. Mold can hide. It hides behind the drywall. It hides under the floorboards. Mold will survive in dark, but UV light inhibits it.
How does it impact the body, and why do you think that we're seeing this so much now?
It impacts the body at a cellular level and molecular level. Tons of opportunities to wreak havoc and trigger symptoms in the body. You can't heal if you're in that same environment that made you sick. Every time you take a breath, you reintroduce those toxins.
What are some tips for preventing mold?
Yeah, so
welcome to the Hormone Healing RD podcast, where you'll get clear, practical guidance for your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalvo, women's health dietitian and mineral expert. After helping thousands of women in navigating my own healing, I know how overwhelming the wellness world can be. And this show really aims to cut through the noise with simple, research and clinical-backed insights on hormones, minerals, and what your body truly needs to heal. And I am joined for this episode with one of my amazing 101 practitioners, Gracie, and she is our mold expert, our resident mold expert at Hormone Healing RD. I have been begging her to do a mold podcast with me because I think that mold is very scary. And we have a lot of clients that we work with that have mold as a concern. So I'm like, we got to do a podcast because Gracie's approach is so, it's not stressful. It's straightforward. You get lots of great steps and clarity. And so I'm like, we have to share this with everyone. So thank you so much for being here, Gracie.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Amanda. Excited.
So let's get into your story with mold specifically. And how did you come to gain so much knowledge when it comes to mold issues?
Yeah, so I was exposed to mold twice. I mean, initially in my dorm. In hindsight, I put that together. This wasn't something I knew right off the bat. But in my college dormitory, I lived in a really old, I think it was an old convent initially. And I started to have skin issues, some candida overgrowth and like oral thrush-like symptoms, multiple periods. And I was given steroids for my keratosis pilaris, which I didn't have before. And I was also put on birth control, which I didn't tolerate. And of course, in hindsight, that was a blessing. But I remember the nurse saying to me that, you know, this thrush didn't exist unless I had HIV or AIDS. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so extreme. Definitely that's not the issue. But, and you know, it was candida overgrowth. It was chronic, turned into chronic sinus infections where I was put on multiple antibiotics. I had lots of post-nasal drip, headaches on and off for years in college. And these symptoms were just really embarrassing. The oral issues were concerning and embarrassing. I did, of course, I was in school for nutrition. So we've all been there and been learning about nutrition. So the signs are even more embarrassing. But I realized that diet played a huge role in some of the flare-ups with my candida overgrowth. And so I was on strict diets on and off those years. So that was my first exposure. Then I was newly married. I went to the dentist and was just there for cleaning. She offered to get my amalgams removed because they were loose. She removed them on the spot, and then I started to have severe GI issues, brain fog, fatigue. I mean, I was intolerant to a ton of foods that I wasn't normally intolerant to before. And then I also was having trouble conceiving, and we have fertility issues, which is the normal, what we hear a lot in Hormone Healing RD. But I worked with acupuncturists and Ayurvedic provider and naturopathic providers, and I would feel better, but I don't think I nipped everything in the bud. I did end up conceiving twice. We have fraternal twins. They're 13, a boy and a girl, and then a little girl who's 11. And I bought a home, and that home had sat vacant for over 6 months, had mold overgrowth in the kitchen area and in the upstairs restroom that we remediated at the time. But by the time we realized there were issues, like in the kitchen area, I already had noticed that my health issues had come back with a vengeance, but on top of that, I was diagnosed with psoriasis and I looked like I was 6 months pregnant. I had cysts on my ovaries. I had cysts on my feet and my hands that no one could really understand and give me a why. I had arthritis-like symptoms. My sensitivities came back with a vengeance as well. And I mean, the list kept going on and on. And I remember at the time also we had baby monitors and I was super sensitive to those. I couldn't sleep. My jaw would hurt. My teeth would felt super uncomfortable. That's so that EMF intolerance was there too. But middle of the day, I had three little babies under two and didn't know why I was so exhausted. The primary care doctor came. I went to see the primary care doctor. I mean, and labs were normal. There was no explanation for my symptoms. And I was told that having children back to back can do this to you. So common story, but I sought out a functional medicine provider at the time and I was diagnosed with, well, SIBO. We know now that that's not a root cause, but a symptom of something else. But I had several gut issues at the time, the same thing, but I was put on abrupt protocols and those protocols just left me feeling super depressed. I started to have heart palpitations, tingling sensations down my neck and my arms, and I was so sick. I remember also when I started that protocol, I was on my way to a nutrition conference, and I had to come home because I was so sick and depressed and so weak. And so that's when I started to learn a little bit and educate myself and, you know, follow up certifications in functional nutrition, herbalism, and just learning about SIBO, learning about so many different things, functional testing. I just kept going. It just didn't stop until I felt better.
And did you go through a mold program specifically? Didn't you have a hard time doing that because you're an RD and not an MD or something?
Yeah. So a lot of the programs that I found for mold were more geared towards naturopathic doctors or MDs or PAs. And I didn't pursue them. But then I realized, you know, the more I started seeing clients in my practice, I started seeing that they just needed those simple foundations. And I think I just took the course without trying to get CEUs. I think it's what it was. And so I took the course and so glad I did. Learned so much. It's all about foundations. It's all about setting up that foundation and, you know, setting them up for healing process. But yeah, love my certifications. I did the Dr. Jill Krista's certification.
Yeah, I'm sure people will ask.
Yes. And then I just started to put the pieces together as I was seeing clients one-on-one. I felt like I was getting those clients that have been chronically ill for such a long time and didn't know where to go or what to do. They just wanted really someone to hear them out and validate their symptoms.
Yeah. It's different when you go through that experience yourself. You know, I mean, you were like for many years and sometimes we don't always know it when we're in it, but it sounds like you had a feeling for a while and then it just got confirmed, you know, once you went through all that training and stuff. And I'm sure it's like, there's no one perfect program. It's kind of like you take what you learn and it's your tools in your toolkit and then you apply it with everything else that, you know, like with clients. And that's what I love about your approach with mold, because it's not a one size fits all. And we need a practitioner on our team that is very, very skilled in mold. And you've been doing this work for a very long time, for like how many, 2 decades?
Yeah. I've been a dietitian for 23 years. And I think I've always done things differently. I never really, like, I just didn't understand the schooling that we're taught in nutrition school. And I didn't know functional medicine was a thing back then, or, you know, CNS or all the other certifications that are out there. I didn't know that that existed. So I just did a normal RD program. And I think it was in 2007 is when I learned about functional medicine and started like confirmed what I was already doing. And I just continued to learn from there.
I know, but that's almost 2 decades.
I know.
That sometimes I'm like, that wasn't that long ago in my head. And then I'm like, it's 2025. So, so funny. But you have a beautiful expertise, gentle, very gentle approach. And that's our goal this episode, because mold is very stressful. Most people, they find out, they think maybe they suspect a mold exposure and they join like a Facebook group or a Reddit thread. And I'm like, you know, probably not the best for your nervous system if your body's already extremely tired and stressed from like navigating and dealing with the mold if you're not detoxing it well. So my goal is to have this resource in part one. It's gonna be two parts. So in this episode, we are gonna be talking about more of like your environment, right? We want to talk about what mold is, how it impacts the body, what creates an environment for it to grow. And then you know, why we like to focus on getting rid of the mold first before you're like going to try to dive into any mold protocols, which is usually the first thing people do and then they feel worse. So we're going to talk about that, how you don't want to do a mold or gut protocol, anything like that. Basically, not too much detox heavy anything when you're still living in mold. We'll get into why. And then we're going to talk about tips for preventing mold growth. So that's going to be the focus this week. Next week, we're going to get into more of supporting your body and what that looks like when you're dealing with the mold. So do you want to talk about what is mold?
So it's a type of fungus and it's a natural part of our environment and grows indoors and outdoors. But when it grows indoors, it can become a health hazard. And that's because it releases spores, fragments, and mycotoxins, and also microbial volatile organic compounds, which we know as NVOCs. And that's sometimes where you'll get that musty mildew smell, not always, but sometimes. So those three types, mold spores, they're seed-like particles that can float in the air. That's how they reproduce. And I get this question asked a lot, like whether it's dormant or not, if it's problematic, and it is. Whether it's viable or non-viable, both can trigger health issues. We still see the same symptoms. It can still trigger asthma flares, immune dysregulation in the long term, especially. So it's still problematic. Then mold fragments are when mold gets disturbed. So those colonies are being built and then it gets disturbed, whether we clean it or we're doing a remodel, they break off into smaller fragments. And those fragments are, just to give you a visual, 500 to one spore, 500 fragments to one whole spore. So sometimes that's why it's tricky to catch it, even if you're testing and if people are doing an investigation, if they have mold in their home, sometimes it's hard to catch those mold fragments because they're so small. Mycotoxins is a third one, and that's the byproducts, the chemical byproducts or secondary metabolites of mold. And only certain species of mold make those under stress. And they can live on surfaces, they can live in the dust, and they can attach to fragments, all those fragments. And those are the ones that we're commonly seeing in the test, like ochratoxin, aflatoxin, trifluralkylenes. That's what we typically hear in a lot of the tests related to mycotoxins. But not all molds can make mycotoxins. Only certain types do, like Staphylococcus, which is an aspergillus and first penicillium. Those are the most common. So like the black mold that you hear of, those are the ones that are typically producing these mycotoxins. And as a rule of thumb, I like to tell people that spores typically induce these symptoms. A lot of the symptoms that you hear, spores can do those, and mycotoxins tend to do the suppressing. So that's why sometimes we see a variety of symptoms and they're still quite resilient. Or sometimes we see that they're just really depleted. And immune system is down and they're chronically ill and aren't able to get better. But ultimately, both will deplete the immune system if you're exposed to mold long enough or need to have a mold long enough.
Okay. And then as far as like where mold grows, are there more common places that people are going to see mold?
Yeah. So bathrooms, basements, kitchens, in anywhere that there is moisture around windows and or leaks. We've had leaks. Like we've had, unfortunately, two leaks in our roof since moving into our home, unfortunately. Carpets is big. Furniture can grow mold. HVAC systems, humidifiers, coastal places, medical devices like CPAP is notorious for growing mold. And then,
oh gosh.
And historic or older buildings tend to also be mold ridden. I mentioned my situation of the dorms, and then I've had several clients, young girls, young women who are just really impacted by mold. And because I suppose because it's minimal ventilation, a co-sharing restroom sometimes. My very first case was a Keurig. She was a newlywed and she came to me for acne, and she had severe cystic acne, and she couldn't figure out why. A year into her journey, she came and saw me, and we figured out that her Keurig had mold. And she opened it, it was like super black with mold. But originally, feeding basins, so our food source, our food, our grains, our animals are being exposed to mold through the basins, the food basins. That's where they originally found mold. And that's where originally livestock were impacted.
Yeah. So those are areas like that I think are worth kind of investigating, especially if someone, maybe they have a lot of symptoms. I feel like it's like you've tried everything else, or I have previously always found it with people when they can't tolerate a gut protocol or any sort of detox. They get super histamine-y, all the symptoms. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, you don't have anything in your history that would make me suspect that you'd have this reaction. And then it turns out that there's mold in their home. And so like, those are definitely like the areas that I think are anything, anywhere with water, like anything like that, I think is so worth investigating. And I'm going to have for Patreon members, I'm going to put all this stuff with the show notes so that you guys have a nice little list of everything that we're going through. And so if you want to ever investigate, although I'm hoping no one needs to do that, so we know what it is. There's the mold spores, the mycotoxins, where it's going to be growing inside the house, where it's more likely to grow at least and thrive. What about, how does it impact the body? Why especially, I'm curious your thoughts too of like, why do you feel like this has so come to the forefront now with mold? I feel like it's just blown up where I feel like everyone has mold illness now, or some particular like exposure with mold. How does it impact the body? And why do you think that we're seeing this so much now?
So it impacts the body in multiple ways. It's hard to list them all out, but it's such an impact because it works at this. It impacts the body in a cellular level and molecular level. So tons of opportunity to wreak havoc and trigger symptoms in the body. It can trigger inflammation in sinuses, which was with me, chronic sinus infections. And I see that often if they tell me that they've had chronic sinus infections, that's a huge red flag for me sometimes. Lung issues, bladder issues, digestive issues, of course, interferes with cellular processes like impacting our mitochondria. It can also impact our DNA and RNA. It depletes the master antioxidant glutathione, which is so key to lowering inflammation and healing. It has also been known, it's carcinogenic, so it can trigger certain cancers. It can break down epithelial lining in the intestines, so that's why we see the GI symptoms. And it can cause the brain barrier, blood-brain barrier as well. And so we start seeing things like clients aren't able to word find or remember things, memory. One that's concerning to me is like recently that I've learned about the most is the causing the placenta into the uterus where it's more active. And so how it impacts our fertility clients and fertility in and of itself. It's also detectable in breast milk. And we also know that it irritates the bladder, which is sometimes mistaken for interstitial cystitis. And then they go down that rabbit hole.
I've seen recurrent UTIs in people with mold. It's like that's a very, very common one I've seen.
Yes. Yes. Recurrent UTIs. And just unexplainable. Even like I have a client who come to me and they say they've been to the doctor so many times, they don't understand why they're having bladder issues. There's no UTI present sometimes. And that's that immune suppression popping in there, right? So it's not detected in some of the typical labs, but it's also an endocrine disruptor. So we see that thyroid suppression because mold blocks that iodine uptake and then impacts also that T4, T3 conversion. It impacts your HIPAA access. So clients typically feel wired but tired, you know, they're in that state. It can also trigger estrogen dominance, which was also my case because of course, we love to talk about the liver, but the liver is one of those key organs that it's overwhelmed, overburdened. We're recycling mycotoxins. And then on top of that, we're not able to recycle and get rid of estrogen properly. So that can trigger symptoms as well. And then chemical sensitivities or EMF sensitivities.
And I feel like just like histamine issues in general. You know, I've done multiple podcast episodes on mast cell activation syndrome. And that is like, I don't know. I feel like there's always a mold component there, or maybe not a current one, but like a previous one. And that's usually a part of the story for a lot of those clients as well.
Absolutely. I don't know if I'm throwing this out there, but I think if it's more than 75% of people with MCAS or histamine issues tend to have mold. I'm not sure where I picked that up, but it's a big amount of people.
And it's kind of like histamines where it can affect all different parts of your body. So the symptoms can seem so random. That's why whenever someone like they've had these random symptoms, like they've tried all the things, it hasn't resolved, they don't tolerate a lot of supplements. Usually my head goes to like, yeah, you might have MCOS and histamine issues, but do you have a previous or current mold exposure? Because that tends to make a lot of that worse.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
And what about how can mold like really grow and thrive? Like what creates an environment for mold to grow? And let's get into that a little bit more so that people, I think this will, yes, symptoms, but also like so people kind of know could this have been a possibility for me?
Yeah, moisture is huge. That's the number one. So a moist environment, relative humidity of 50 to 70% is what we're seeing in the studies, like on some of these pretty popular mold toxins, that they're growing in that 50 to 70% range. And so once again, leaks, flooding, condensation, those are perfect storms for mold to germinate and become a problem. They also thrive in the same temperatures that we like to live in. So 60 to 80 degree Fahrenheit is where they thrive and they're comfortable. So it doesn't, once again, it doesn't mean that when it's colder or when it's hotter that mold will not be a problem. It can still be a problem at any temperature, but they thrive in that 60 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And so when you see big temperature swings, that can trigger issues like condensation and more spore growth. Food sources are huge for mold. So building materials, household items, dust and debris. So skin cell, mold feeds on skin cells, lint, dirt, all of those are food for mold. So it can thrive quite easily in a home environment.
I feel like it's always like remediation. Like people always focus on that. And I'm like, you have to also keep your house pretty clear of dust. Like that's also, I feel like that's a huge part of prevention as well.
Oh, huge. Yeah. Dusting regularly is huge. Washing your curtains, changing out your bed sheets, dusting under and behind your bed. I probably am notorious for making my kids and myself move our furniture. We're constantly moving our furniture just to clean up and get rid of dust. Yeah. And poor airflow or poor ventilation. So still stagnant air, which was the case of this home. It was vacant for months and months and we moved in. But all that moisture traps in corners, behind walls, and can trigger a mold issue. Darkness is big. So that's why we see basements are always an issue. Attics, HVAC systems, mold will survive in dark, but UV light inhibits it. I clearly remember when I had my mold exposure here, I just wanted to be outside. Like I would sunbathe all day long or as long as I could, you know, and I felt so much better outside. I could not be in my home.
Oh, that's so interesting. I know whenever we have clients work on the circadian rhythm support, I feel like that makes a big difference. And I'm like, oh, maybe it's the light.
It is. Yeah. It inhibits its growth. And I would just soak it in, soak it in. And then time. Time is huge. Like it just takes 24 to 48 hours for the right conditions, that moisture, that leak, whatever, to have mold become a problem.
If you are feeling off, exhausted, or just stuck with your hormones and your health in general, and you're like, I do not know where to begin, the wellness world is so overwhelming. I completely understand. You've probably heard me talk about minerals a million times. They are truly foundational for hormones, thyroid, metabolism, overall health, but knowing how to support them is typically where most people get stuck. Like they know they're important, but they're like, what do I do? This is why I created my Mineral Starter Guide. It's a free, jam-packed resource that walks you through the basics of minerals, how they become depleted, how they affect our hormones, how to get them tested, and then how to actually start rebalancing them. I go through 5 very simple steps you can do without any testing. And you can grab your free copy of this by clicking the link in the show notes, or you can find me on Instagram at hormonehealingrd and DM me Mineral Guide, and I'll send it right to you. Obviously, you've been through this yourself, with having leaks and stuff in your house. What do you do when, is there, cause like, what if you don't notice a leak right away? I don't want everyone to like, feel like, oh my gosh. So like it can grow. So it's like, you hear the information. You're like, oh, mold is in my house. Like what would you do if you found something?
Well, when we had our ceiling, we had 2 leaks in the same spot. One was AC related and one was roof to AC related. We just called the professionals to come out and clean it. My husband is handy. I remember he did cut out quite a bit of it and sealed it. And then we had the professionals come out and fix the leak and then repair the wall. But I'm not into remediation, but I definitely called the experts. He had them remediate right away.
Yeah. Basically, as soon as you find it, you just don't want to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. If there is mold growth, then that's when you can call the mold experts to come in and remediate properly at that point. But just fixing that leak as soon as you find it is what we did.
Yeah. Just because there's not like more time to grow. I think we had to get a new HVAC. We just moved at like our old house and they had an option to get like a UV light in there. and stuff. It was more expensive, but I was like, yes, because we were in North Carolina and obviously it's like very humid and stuff there. I'm sure there's like so much mold. I don't know if that house had mold. I was like, I don't want to know, honestly. I didn't have any health issues or anything there, but it was, you know, it's just like, I just don't want to know. And that's a question I have for you is how come some people don't react to mold and some do? But like little things like that, I'm like, they should just make all like AC units have the UV light in it, you know? It's crazy that you have to like pay extra to have it in there. I'm like, okay. But little things like that, I'm like, okay. So like we took that thing out and then brought it to this one because we could and put it in our current one. But it, like little things like that, dusting, just being mindful of the temperature shifts and stuff, leaks, and like just like looking, like just moving your stuff around. This is like the also a huge reason why it's helpful to like declutter. Declutter your home. Don't have too much stuff because it, I just think it makes it unmanageable. You know, I am curious because we'll talk about why you have to get rid of the mold first. If you feel like, if you feel like this is a part of your health story, but how come some people will have all these symptoms in a moldy environment and then some won't? Like, were you the only one in your house that had symptoms?
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised my kids didn't get sick, but I was the one in the kitchen. I was the one washing dishes and loading the dishwasher. Our dishwasher was a main issue. I think genetics plays a huge role for me. And I think it does play a huge role for a lot of our chronically ill clients. We're the ones at home, typically. We're the ones breathing in that toxic mold, or we're the ones in the work environment. If it was a work building that made you sick.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about that too. Work.
I think it was just, I was there, I was breathing it in. And I think genetics plays a huge role for me too. Yeah. Genetics. I think I'm not sure what the statistic is exactly, but there are some mold genes that you can look at to see how well you tolerate it or not. If it's an issue, then that's when we start to see more symptoms. But I also think everybody's exposure to toxins is different as well. Like the foods that we're eating and drinking and exposing ourselves to is different for everyone.
And I always feel like the moms have so much on their plate, you know, too. So it's also like, how resilient is your body? Are you, and like you, I don't think you having two kids back to back is the number, like, you know, but it's like, or three kids, sorry, the twins and then your middle one. But it is something where it's like, that does put small children, you know, it's a lot more, it's a lot. I mean, I think it's like the fun ages, but it's also like their needs are so high, and you're also like learning how to like I'm only like 3.5 years into motherhood, but I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and guess the first like 5 years, you're just like, you're still learning with every new baby you're learning. So it's definitely like depletion, stress. Like I feel like a mom is going to be much more likely, like maybe they're a little less resilient, especially if they don't know how to take care of themselves or have like previous history of like gut issues their whole life or chronic stress their whole life, or maybe they don't have good foundations in place. They're going to be much more likely to have like, your body can't tolerate this. It can't process this out on its own.
Yeah. I think we do have a lot on our plate, and it definitely made me take a step back and do lots of self-care. I mean, I was doing the best I could, but yeah, I think we do take on a lot, and it makes us more vulnerable to a lot of issues, like health issues.
Yeah. And a twin pregnancy and postpartum is also very different from a single one. Although all my friends that have twins are like, I don't know, the twins were like almost easier than the single babies for some reason.
Well, for me being a first time mom and having twins, I thought it was hard. When I had my third baby, Lily, she's 11 now. I thought, this is so easy. Like, she was such a good baby. And like, I just exclusively nursed her with the twins. I was like nursing and bottle feeding. I mean, it was just a lot. But yeah, it was fun sometimes.
You never know. But okay, so that's just an aside, but because it's kind of like, why do some people react? Some people don't. And I'm sure you can get like genetic testing. One of my clients did that. And I was like, well, even if the test tells us that you're more susceptible, like we already know that you are currently have a mold exposure that you're dealing with, and that we're trying to like support your body in processing that. So I don't know. I think it could be, if someone likes data and that sort of thing, or wants to kind of like a why, you know, I don't think it's the whole why, but I'm like, you know, it's not going to change anything that we're going
to
do.
No, it's not going to change. I was about to say that. It's not going to change anything we do at all. We're going to support supported me the same way. So yeah, I did do some genetic testing and I don't recall that it had any of those mold SNPs on there, but I'm not going to spend money on figuring that out because I would just work with it the same way.
Yeah, for sure. So just wanted to point that out in case people want to, you know, just don't run off and get a test if it's not going to change what you do. So we talked about what mold is, how it can impact the body, the areas that it can, like the conditions, the areas that it can more likely be to grow in. Now, the big thing that I see a lot is people, they have a mold exposure, they find mold, and they're like, okay, I'm going to start this mold detox and stuff. Why do we have to get rid of the exposure first before we do anything else?
Yeah. So you can't heal if you're in that same environment that made you sick. You just can't do it. It's going to set you back significantly. And even if you're not just exposed at one time, most likely if you're in mold, you're constantly having this input of toxins and it's constantly making you sick. So you're breathing in and your skin is exposed to mold toxins. You're breathing in air 24/7. And every time you take a breath, you reintroduce those toxins. And so it's like a little bucket. You're filling up the bucket. The bucket's already been full, but now it's taxed even further and your body can't keep up with it and can't detox properly. So even if you're taking certain nutrients to support those nutrient deficiencies that you found in your blood work or your whatever test you took or binders or just any detox protocols that you're on, even if you're on those things, it's still going to be a setback and it's still going to impact your healing journey. I just find that sometimes it can deter you from moving forward with working with somebody who knows how to, you know, manage mold or support you in mold because you're nervous and you're scared from these experiences of like starting these protocols and then you're still in mold.
I know we always ask that. We're like, do you know if you're currently living in mold? It's one of our top questions. It's on our client application because we will tell you that we can support you, but we can't do any detox stuff until you're not in it anymore. So why should someone not do a mold detox? They're so trendy now. Like I can't even, it's like, it's good in some ways. Like I've definitely seen some good things come of it. It's getting talked about more, but I've seen way more people that are, they try to do like, I'm not going to say any names of brands, but they go through a mold detox, trendy, just like a kit that you can buy. Cause they're like, I have this mold exposure or I used to live in mold. And they feel absolutely terrible, which obviously we're going to get into more of that stuff next week. But when you're physically living in it, why should you not take supplements to detox the mold?
You're constantly exposed to these toxins once again, and you are outpacing your detox ability. So you're constantly exposed to those mold toxins and you're not able to keep up with it. And it overwhelms your detox pathways. Sometimes mobilizing toxins can recirculate them and then you start to feel, once again, you reabsorb them and you have increasing symptoms. You have an increase in your symptoms, or sometimes clients will have a Hertz reaction where it just feel worse and it can make, you can have new symptoms even like rashes or feel super nauseated. So you have that constant exposure to it and you can't keep up with the detox and then you're mobilizing them. And so you're recirculating the same mold toxins. And then the immune system is constantly activated and not able to calm down and respond to even your protocol. So it stays on high alert in that inflammatory state. And there's not really any supplement that can calm that inflammation down completely because your immune system is on high alert. So
I feel like you just make a mess, like just creates this like crazy inflammatory reaction in the body. It's just stirring it all up. And if you're not, if you already weren't detoxing it well, which is what the symptoms are showing you, then adding more detox on top of that, I'm like, and you're still exposed to it. It's just, I've seen just people, like you said, new symptoms pop up. They're kind of like, oh my gosh, I thought I was doing the right thing, which makes sense. You're like, oh, I have a mold exposure. I'm going to give my body some extra support. But in reality, that's not the support that it needs in that time. It's like, you got to get out of the mold first.
Absolutely. So they end up more inflamed. And in my case, I was just super depleted. Like I just couldn't I honestly don't know how I got home from my conference that day. But yeah, I was super depleted. And a lot of the protocols, they just, yeah, they make the symptoms worse and deplete you further and will deplete them even more.
So let's go through some tips for preventing mold and just kind of, I think these will be obvious based on everything we talked about, but I think it'll be helpful to kind of go through them. And then we'll finish with, because I know a lot of people are like, how do you find a place without mold? Now, how do you find a place to live? So we can finish with that. But let's go through, what are some tips for preventing mold if people want to do that?
Yeah. So quantify the humidity in each room. There's a simple meter that I use with my in my home. And you can move the meters around, but I have a few in restrooms, kitchens. They're $9 to $15 on Amazon. And you can measure the humidity. So for instance, in my restroom, after I got out of my shower, I kind of monitored humidity, opened up the doors. I know I have to open up the doors, open up the shower doors to kind of make sure that mold doesn't set into that room. So monitoring, quantifying the humidity in your rooms is going to be huge. So those monitors, those meters are available online. If you need a dehumidifier, I have a few clients who use those. One of my clients right now, she uses one. She's on the coast. So that has been super helpful for her. She noticed like her towels weren't moist anymore and now she could, they can dry and we can reuse those towels. Water from refrigerator. The filters in the refrigerator aren't enough. And we tend to see the same thing happen like with cure eggs. The mold sets in and becomes problematic. And then coils on the back of the fridge need to be, that the refrigerator needs to be pulled out and maintained every once in a while. Your washing machine needs to be maintenance. Reducing carpetings. That was one of the first things we did is we got rid of a lot of the carpeting in our first floor. We still have a lot in our second floor, but reducing carpeting significantly helped me in my healing journey. No finished basements. It's hard to hide. I mean, it's easy to hide mold when you finish a basement. Yeah, it didn't make sense to me at first, but yeah, you don't want to seal. It's a dark area and mold can grow behind the walls, even on concrete. So no finished basements. And we don't have a basement issue down south, but I know it's pretty prevalent up north.
I haven't seen a basement since I lived in Connecticut.
yeah, same. New York. Yeah, I don't remember seeing any.
But everyone had a finished basement.
I know.
Yeah.
It's tricky. But there are ways to get people in there to investigate and to really, the experts will know how to find it and remediate properly. Air movement is important. So propping doors open, windows open as often as you can when the weather's nice. That's going to be super important. Airing out your closets. We love essential oils in our home. And so we use essential oils on cotton balls and just put them in our closets. Certain essential oils like clove, tea tree, cinnamon, thyme, all those are antifungal and amazing. And so some of them smell nice. So cinnamon is great in cloves. Those are going to be fantastic for closets or just small enclosed places. Avoid clutter like you mentioned. That's huge. Shower windows, you can wipe showers and windows. You can wipe those with vinegar to clean them up. Managing grout everywhere in your kitchen, your bathrooms, around your home. Checking for leaky toilets. That was another issue with us upstairs. We had leaky toilets that were sitting there. And so we had to take those out, fix them or replace them. And then checking your attic after big storms. We constantly have tornadoes. We don't have big snows, but tornadoes for sure. And installing hyper HEPA filters are fantastic. Some of them have sanitizing and incinerating properties that can be really helpful. And then also one that I kind of overlooked myself as a young adult, changing out my car air filters. I rarely did that.
Oh, my dad was a mechanic. He would never let me not do that. That's the only, any car stuff I'm definitely like. But I've had people have mold in their cars.
Yeah, yeah. I live in Texas, Houston. I get a lot of people from the coast there, down there, Gallatin, Houston area. And humidity and moldy cars, moldy homes can be a problem for sure. Even I have had a lot of Louisiana clients too.
Yeah, yeah.
With the same issue, mold overgrowth in their cars. And then just also from flooding, if it's not remediated properly, that can be a red flag.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. And then your work, of course. I've seen a lot of clients where it wasn't in their home. A lot of my teachers in their schools, a lot of them, like the old buildings and stuff like that. So like that is obviously difficult.
Absolutely. I think those are hard places to have, you know, it's a matter of choosing whether you continue to work there or not, really, in most cases. A lot of people aren't familiar with mold or mold remediation and how that works. And for a big building, like a business building or a school, that's pretty tricky. But yeah, the biggest ones are dust regularly, lots of movement, lots of air movement in your home, and lots of sunlight. Open up the windows, open up the curtains and let the sunlight in. Spend time outside. And those are super important.
And then if someone is looking, so whether they're going to rent or buy a home or an apartment or whatever, condo, what are some things that they can like look for to make sure that they are? We had a mold test done on our house in Florida. I was terrified. I was like, oh my God, please don't have mold, please. You know, but yeah. So what are some things people can look for? Ask about questions they could ask. I don't know if you have any of those for people.
I would say is hire someone to test and see if your home has mold or if your apartment has mold, if you're thinking about staying for a long time. But I would hire somebody to properly investigate to see if there's mold in the home, because mold can hide. It hides in dark, hide behind the drywall. Sometimes you can't, it hides under the floorboards. Sometimes you can't find it when you're visually looking for it. So having some professional that can really help with that, I think would be the best way to go.
Yeah, that's what we did. So I'm like, I mean, if we're going to invest in the house, obviously, we're going to spend that much money, like you might as well like get a good mold person in there. And I do think that's worth it. And one of our nutritionists has been looking at apartments like forever. And she went to one and kind of had a little bit of a musty smell. It was like a red flag. And then she's looking under the sink, anywhere like kitchen where there's water. Like we looked very thoroughly through this house. But like you said, like it's not always going to be obvious. My husband did look in the attic. There's no basement or anything. And we were lucky that the owner was here when we went to look at the house, which is not always possible. And so we did get to like talk like with him and everything. So, okay, last thing, because it's an environment topic, and then we're going to switch our gears and we're going to get into what people do wrong when it comes to dealing with like the physical stuff with mold. What about air filters? So like, say we get a client, they have a mold exposure, they're going to get it remediated. What can they do in the meantime? Like, is there an air filter or something they can get?
Yes. I love IntelliPure is my favorite. IntelliPure had an incinerator, which is the one I have upstairs in the carpet where the carpet is. They no longer have it, but Airfree has an incinerator like air filter. So IntelliPure, Airfree, and IQ Air are three of the top air filters that I love to recommend. There may be a few more that I can add to that list.
IntelliPure, AirCure,
Airfree, and IQ Air.
Okay, I'll put these in that document and we'll put them in the show notes too.
Yeah. Those three, we have a ton of IntelliPure's air filters in our home. In almost every room, we have an IntelliPure, but I really loved, they got rid of the incinerator type. I love the incinerator type because even if you're past due on your filter, that incinerator will kill off essentially all of those toxins, and they're not going to be recirculated if your filter is full. So that's why I like the incinerator types. They can be pretty pricey, but I think those three were the most reasonably priced.
I always hear about the Air Doctor. Do you like air doctors?
I don't use an air doctor. I think I saw more. I tried one years back. I think I saw more results with the IntelliPure as far as like dust in my home and in my room. So I have noticed with two of those brands, I have noticed a difference in the dust in my home. That's one way I can gauge it. But honestly, I'm not an expert when it comes to like home remediation.
I wasn't sure, like, because I'm like, I'm sure clients have asked you about, should I get? Because that's the one you see online the most, I feel like, is the air doctor.
It is. Yeah, I think one thing that I did notice is mold and fungal overgrowth the microns are so small. I think the ones that I mentioned have an even smaller threshold, so can capture quite a bit of mold toxins. So that's what you're looking for, is that threshold. I think, I don't know the measurements right now off the top of my head, but
yeah.
The ones I can,
because sometimes it's like, okay, well, I can't get it remediated immediately. Also, it's a process because you have to have someone come out and look at it. That would be like the first step, right? And then a separate company remediates it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. You don't want the same person to do the work. You want to have two separate professionals. They can, the investigators tend to investigate totally different than, just want to have, what's the word? I'm at a loss for words right now with the investigators.
It's like a conflict of interest if they're doing both, right? Yeah. And I've seen some companies do that.
I know, it's very easy. And I think our first question is going to be, you know, who can help me remediate? And so they have a guy. But we have resources available that we can give our clients so that they know who to look out for and who to ask for and what credentials you're looking for. And we can definitely provide that.
Yeah. I'll put some of that stuff in the notes for the Patreon people too. So that when with like, here's what to look out for, all that stuff. And then it's like inspector considerations, remediation considerations. And it's going to be different for everyone based on where they live anyway, but just like things you might want to consider. But I think that's it. It's hopefully this gave a little insight into like mold in a physical environment, why it grows certain places. How could you shift things? Like I'm in Florida now. And I mean, I was in North Carolina before, but I'm like very, very close to the beach. And so this is something that has been top of my mind with like, all right, I'm going to get those little humidity meters, put them, especially in the older, we have a new addition to this house. And then the old part, it was built in 1979, I think. And so like, it's not as cold in part of the house. So there's like little things and like being mindful of clutter, dust, sunlight, opening your windows, all those basic things. And I think a lot of people will find like there's a lot that you can do, especially if you have to go through the remediation process. Obviously it's expensive, it's stressful, but then it's like, okay, what could I do differently after? Sometimes it has nothing to, it's a leak, you couldn't control it, but it's like, what could I just do on a regular basis to reduce, you know, the mold spores and like possibility for like growth in my home.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Gracie, for being so helpful this episode. We are actually going to go record part two right now. You guys will get it next week. So hopefully if you want all access to the resources, make sure you join Patreon. They will get those the week that this episode comes out, as far as like what to look out for, basically all like the notes from the episode and links to everything that we mentioned. And that's just patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. If you guys want to keep up with me, make sure you're on my newsletter, Feminine Periodical. Goes out every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. The link to enroll is in the show notes as well. And I think that's it. I'll see you guys in the next episode.